Welcome to episode 5 of this season's Idiom America. As we're entering the holiday season here, one idiom you often come across is white elephant, which has a few different meanings, but the one you most often come across this time of year refers to a gift exchange in which participants bring unwanted items that can then be chosen and swapped, depending on the particular rules of the gathering. And just this last week, my office had its annual Christmas / holiday party, and we did the white elephant thing, and I traded up once and got some Grateful Dead cards, so I was pretty happy. And there's a variation on this gift exchange known as a white elephant fundraiser, in which unwanted items have been donated for sale. And then finally, there's an understanding of a white elephant as an expensive item that is troublesome or useless. And it's an unwanted possession that is hard to get rid of, but too valuable to throw away. And this term comes from a widely told story about albino elephants in Siam, or Southeast Asia, present-day Burma, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia. Siam was big back in the day in the game of Risk, but it's kind of outdated, Burma too. But anyway, in that area of the country, these white elephants were regarded as sacred. And when the monarch had one of these white elephants, it was a sign that he reigned with justice and power, and that the kingdom was blessed with peace and prosperity, because the animals were considered sacred and laws protected them from labor. Receiving a gift of a white elephant from a monarch was simultaneously a blessing and a curse. It was a blessing because the animal was sacred and a sign of the monarch's favor, and a curse because the recipient now had an expensive to maintain animal that he could not give away and could not put to much practical use. And the story became known in England in the 17th century, and by the 19th century the term had been transferred to other unwanted items. According to one source, it was popularized following P.T. Barnum's experience with an elephant that he billed as the sacred white elephant of Burma. After much effort and great expense, Barnum finally acquired the animal from the King of Siam, only to discover that his white elephant was actually dirty gray in color with a few pink spots. And you often hear the term used nowadays for expensive building or infrastructure projects that are costly to maintain. And you can find lists on the internet of the top 10 greatest white elephants along these lines. And which one is the greatest of them all is a matter of some debate, for sure. But I vote for the Rigyong Hotel in North Korea. And take a look at it. It's a pyramid-like structure that looks kind of like a stylized cartoon space rocket. It's 1,080 feet tall, making it by far the most prominent feature of Pyongyang's skyline and the tallest structure in North Korea. And construction began way back in 1987 and it has 105 stories. It's still never hosted a single guest. Oh, and it's been dubbed the worst building in the world and the Hotel of Doom, and has been listed in the Guinness World Records as the largest unoccupied building on the planet. And there are other white elephants out there. I don't mean to pick on Pyongyang. And a lot of the white idioms out there are pretty self-explanatory, to the point where it's questionable whether they're even an idiom at this point. Take White Christmas, for example. It's pretty clear that it refers to a Christmas day when it snows. Or take White as Snow. Also sometimes heard as White as the Driven Snow, or White as Snow. Doesn't need a whole lot of explanation to know that this refers to something extremely white or pale. Or even take White Knuckle to refer to something that causes or indicates intense fear, anxiety, or stress. This one also means to grip something so tightly that that one's knuckles turn white. And so it's pretty easy to see how this meaning and that image came to refer to something that provokes anxiety or fear. And you also hear this one in the form of to white knuckle something, which means to survive something threatening through strained endurance. Say a terrible flight that you had to white knuckle. And this one's also sometimes heard kind of like a synonym for quitting something cold turkey, where you white knuckle your sobriety, for example. But there are some white idioms whose origin isn't so readily apparent. For example, why are ghosts white, as in white as a ghost? Or why do we call something a white lie? What about white noise, white night, white collar? Let's take a look at some of those. Let's start with white knight, referring to a hero who comes to the rescue, or a beleaguered champion who fights heroically for a cause, as in politics. You also hear this one in business, where one company comes to the rescue of another as to prevent a takeover. And I figured that this one might have something to do with the other idiom, knight in shining armor. Armor that's so shining it appears blindingly white, perhaps. But it probably goes deeper than that, and it taps into the long history and mythology and human culture where you have a positive and negative color symbol that are diametrically opposed to each other. And that's intimidating stuff. It seems like it taps into the most basic of our abilities to tell right from wrong, good from evil, black versus white. But then you think of racist tropes and wonder about why white is almost always portrayed as better. But then you think of the day, the light versus the dark, and it makes sense. But then there are lots of symbols, yin and yang being one of them, or just thinking about how I haven't really been able to ever show my daughter the stars, the galaxy, the Milky Way, the infinite expanse, because of too much light. And then that leads to dark matter versus regular matter. We still don't understand either. Although the light matter is easier to shine a light upon than the dark, and to learn something about. Or just think of how cute a panda is. The black versus white, that contrast there, that's a big reason why, I think. Or I don't know, I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, so I think of Gandalf the Grey becoming Gandalf the White. Or I think of the religious, art of my youth, where angels were depicted as white and dark angels as evil. That's a long way of saying that a white knight is kind of a mythological figure and kind of a literary stock figure character that's usually portrayed alongside a black knight as kind of a diametric opposite, and maybe there's nothing more to it than that. A white knight usually represents a heroic warrior that's fighting against evil, with the role in medieval literature being represented by a knight errant or a black knight. And you also hear this black and white thinking sometimes with respect to computer hackers or those who know how to use that language, where a white hat hacker or an ethical hacker is an individual who uses hacking skills to identify security vulnerabilities in hardware, software, or networks so that they can alert the software company or the government or whatever entity is behind the software. And that's opposed to a black hat hacker or a malicious hacker who doesn't respect the rule of law as it applies to hacking or as it applies to anything, really. And white hat hackers, they only seek those vulnerabilities or exploits when they are legally permitted to do so. And those white hat hackers may do their research on open source software or the kind of software where they've been permitted or authorized to investigate, and then they fully disclose all the vulnerabilities they find to the owner, who then can fix the flaws so that the issues can be resolved before they're exploited by malicious hackers. And that's in contrast to the black hat hackers, who have no qualms whatsoever about selling vulnerabilities and exploits to the highest bidder, mercenaries, I suppose you could call them. And then you got your gray hat hackers who fall between the white and black hats on the moral spectrum. And gray hats, they generally consider themselves to be good guys who are more flexible about the rules under which they operate. For example, a gray hat hacker, he may be more likely than a white hat hacker to access those systems that they don't have permission or authorization from the owners to access, but they'd be much less likely than a black hat hacker to cause damage to those systems. And to me, they're the most interesting of the hackers, but nobody wore a gray hat in those old Western movies. You know, it's the heroes wearing the white hats and the bad guys wearing the black ones, but guys like Walter White from Breaking Bad, those kind of morally debatable figures, you know, at least initially, if they had to don a Western cowboy hat, they'd probably don a gray one. And while we're on the subject of moral ambiguity, what about lying? What about white lies or those that fall more on the darker side of the spectrum of deception and less on the brighter side of verisimilitude? And we all tell them, and we all feel morally good enough about ourselves when we do so. And that's because in the moral calculation, at least as we selfishly calculate it for ourselves, we find that everything comes out in favor of deceit. We tell a lie because it is a net positive. It helps everyone feel better about themselves. Only the truth is the victim an innocent victim, and so it's a lie about a small or unimportant matter that we tell to avoid hurting another person. And if it was something important, the truth might prevail as the principle that we should give the most weight to, but usually it's just about trying to avoid hurting somebody's ego in an innocuous way or letting a kid live in a more Disney-like wonderland for a while longer. And so, in that sense, those circumstances, white lying can be morally superior to strict truth-telling, I suppose. But why the white? Where'd that come from? You know, we could take it back far enough, trace it back through Oxford English Dictionary and the like, but really it comes down again to this ancient division between black and white, where white is in front of the word lie because of old associations with black and white colors, where white connotes goodness or purity, and black implies evil or darkness. Again, mostly probably because of day and night, and that makes sense. When do the monsters come out? Not in the white light of day, but the deep, dark black at night. Think of black magic versus white magic. And while you're thinking of those two, maybe the idea of a ghost slips in. Is the ghost green or black or white? White most likely, think of the idiom white as a ghost or even white as a sheet, and how any self-respecting kid goes around in a Halloween costume of ghost in a white sheet, not a black one. So why are ghosts automatically, idiomatically envisioned as white? And it seems that this one arose around the 1850s from the practice of wrapping the deceased in a burial shroud. In poorer families, a simple white sheet was used as a shroud, likely the sheet they died on. And because ghosts had often been depicted as skeletons still wrapped in their shroud, people later imagined the dead coming back as apparitions still shrouded in their death sheets, which led to people using sheets to dress themselves up as ghosts during Halloween, and this image of a sheet-covered figure became associated with the appearance of ghosts. And it's possible that the phrase "white as a sheet" occurred first, but to my mind, a ghost seems the more likely origin. And there are still some white idioms here to go. What about white collar or white noise? But I'm going to wave the white flag and bow out for now. Thanks for listening. And I hope your holidays are happy, and in some way, your Christmas is white.